Coming up today, Steve Jordahl tells why Tractor Supply Company is getting out of the culture war.
They're going to get rid of their DEI department. DEI stands for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. It's shorthand for woke.
Then we'll tell you about the leading big tech companies and their apps that put children at risk for exploitation. Tim Nestor of the National Center on Sexual Exploitation joins us.
So we know that these tech companies are very aware of the content that's on their site, and as soon as there's public pressure, they can take action.
Also, Dr. Jerry Newcomb reflects on Louisiana's new law placing the Ten Commandments in its state-funded schools.
I'm confident that the founding fathers would have been aghast at the idea that the Ten Commandments would not even be allowed in public schools.
It's the weekend of July 13th and 14th. I'm Jeff Shambly, and this is The Stand Radio. Well, as we cover all aspects of the culture war going on around us, it's always good to bring some good news to the table. It appears that while diversity, equity, and inclusion have been pushed on companies large and small, one of those has had enough social engineering under its belt and is ready to get back to the main thing, and that is serving its customers. We're talking about Tractor Supply Company, and Steve Jordahl of American Family News has been covering that. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Jeff.
Tell us what's been going on with Tractor Supply. This is crazy.
Yeah, no, it's actually really good news. So the whole thing started with just one podcaster. His name is Robbie Starbuck, who decided that he shopped at this place and he didn't like going in there and seeing the rainbows everywhere. And they had other woke things. They had climate agendas and all this kind of stuff in there. And he got to thinking, he says, this isn't the company that I shop at that I know. And he started calling attention to what was going on. And, well, Tractor Supply heard from its customers, and they put out a statement. So this is what they wrote. They said, we've heard from our customers that we have disappointed them. We have taken this feedback to heart. So this is just that alone says it's worth the effort to make your voice heard. I know that, you know, like we say, call Target and tell them you want men out of women's dressing rooms. They listen. They have to. I mean, Target's been hard-headed on it, but this is it can work. So this is what they've said. Going forward, this is what they're going to do. They're no longer going to submit data to the Human Rights Campaign. Human Rights Campaign is the largest gay rights activist group out there. And basically, they rate businesses and put out a listing every year of the most gay-friendly businesses. Well, Tractor Supply's not going to play the game anymore. They're withdrawing their name from consideration. They're going to get rid of their DEI department. DEI stands for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. It's shorthand for woke. All the woke stuff, they're not going to be doing it.
Yeah.
They're going to start supporting causes that are non-political, animal welfare, veterans causes, ag education. And they're going to withdraw all their carbon emission goals and focus on the land and water conservation efforts. They have gone back. And what Robbie Starbuck said was these woke policies aren't what the customers want. Jeff, it confuses me why companies decide to go there when it's such a small percentage of Americans that really believe this stuff. Yeah. Most people maybe are a little afraid to speak out against it. Not in this case, obviously. But the tail is certainly wagging the dog for the most part here.
Well, you know, the Human Rights Campaign is the engine behind this DEI and a lot of the gender ideology that we see going around. This, I can't imagine a more drastic about face. They didn't have to say all of these things that they were going to do, and they just kind of laid it all on the table. What effect is this going to have on other companies that put DEI policies in place?
Well, and this is what Robbie Starbuck said. In fact, I'm going to quote him here. He said, we're setting a new standard, and corporations and their CEOs are going to have to reckon with this. They're going to have to understand that they may be next and that certain types of business are toxic. So, you know, and there are certain companies that are true believers that no matter how much money they lose, they're not going to divert from this insanity. But I think for the most part, if you own a business – your job is about making money. for not only your investors, and it's about providing the best quality service and product that you can for your customers. That's capitalism. That's America.
Yeah, well, sanity is coming back to the marketplace.
Slowly but slowly it is. Yeah, yeah. We can only hope that this is the first of many.
Well, we look forward to having you on to talk about the next company.
I'll be glad to come back anytime, Jack. Right.
Thanks for joining us. Part of the cultural revolution America is experiencing is being seen in the ways corporations are enabling and even profiting from the sexual exploitation of children. Now, these are some of the most wealthy and influential companies in the world, ones that you're already likely using on some level. Here to shed some light on that is Tim Nestor. He's the Senior Director of Communications at the National Center on Sexual Exploitation. Tim, it's good to have you with us.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. Glad to talk about this important topic.
Now, your organization has just released what you've called the 2024 Dirty Dozen list of companies who are profiting from sexual exploitation. How did you come up with this list and who's on it?
Yeah, so our team does an amazing job. Our corporate advocacy team does an amazing job of doing research, of testing platforms, finding out where are the predators and those who have ill intent going to gather? Where are they going to try to target kids and those who are vulnerable to sexual exploitation? And every year we test the ones that have been on the list before. Did they make changes? Did the changes they said they made actually work? Mm-hmm. And then that narrows down the list to where are kids and those who are vulnerable going to be most likely to be exploited. So that's how the list comes together. A ton of research, a ton of time goes into it. We have an incredible team who does that work. And then the list goes out usually every spring. On DirtyDozenList.com, we'll have the list every year. And if you want, I can go through the list, if that'd be helpful to hear.
Yeah, let's walk through the list and you give us kind of an overview of what's going on with these companies.
Sure. So we have Apple. Everyone's going to be familiar with Apple. We believe their record is rotten to the core when it comes to child protection. They refuse to detect CSAM on their platform. And the iCloud still has plenty of examples of CSAM there, and we want them to detect CSAM. App Store ratings are still deceptive and can allow children to access harmful apps, sometimes even have them advertised to them. And we want them to let kids report abuse to create easily accessible reporting in iMessage. And I just want to highlight our allies and friends over at the HEAT Initiative. They are doing an amazing job pushing Apple to make changes. And so you can visit them at protectchildrennotabuse.org. Great work they're doing.
Now, you mentioned CSAM. What is that?
Yeah, that is child sexual abuse material.
Okay, okay.
And, you know, of course, that is illegal, but a lot of times, whether it's a deep fake or AI generated, becomes a gray area for some folks.
Okay, got it. All right.
So we have Cash App. You guys are familiar with Cash App? It is the most used payment platform when it comes to commercial sex transactions. Mm-hmm. And it's so easy to create an account and not be identified. So Cash App is a very dangerous one. CDA 230 is one that I think a lot of people have the most questions about. It is part of the Communications Decency Act, Section 230. And that's where it's easy to get kind of lost in all the legislative dialogue around this. Mm-hmm. We believe it's the greatest enabler of online sexual exploitation. And we are pushing for legislators to sunset Section 230, which was actually just introduced in May of this year. Okay. A Democrat and a Republican have unified together to say it's time to sunset this immunity for big tech companies.
Good. That's encouraging.
Two others real quick that are familiar to some folks. Cloudflare, they are hosting or allowing a infrastructure for websites that will help, whether it's traffickers, deep fakers, those who host CSAM, as we talked about before, and prolific prostitution forums. Cloudflare is a technology company providing support and website infrastructure for some of those. And then Discord, which I'm sure a lot of parents will be familiar with. It's a hotspot for dangerous interactions and deepfakes and CSAM targeting of minors. It's very easy, especially with the gaming focus of that platform.
And I see a couple of others on the list, and I guess this is an alphabetical list here. Meta, obviously, is one of the wealthiest companies. What are they doing? What's Facebook and all of their brands doing?
Yeah, so they are arguably, they own and manage the most dangerous apps for kids.
Okay.
The only policies and safety features they've implemented in our experience with them is under extreme public pressure. And there still are pedophile networks, deepfakes, sex trafficking, CSAM selling, trading, sharing, happening. It's just those who are perpetrating these illegal acts, by the way, are getting more and more creative. And Meta usually is not proactive. They wait until they get pressure from the public.
Okay. Wow.
To enable safety features.
I see Spotify is on the list too, Tim. And I would think, you know, I've used Spotify. I don't get into that platform so much, but according to your list here, they are involved in this exploitation. What are they doing?
So Spotify, and I got to admit, I use Spotify as well. It's a great music streaming app. But as we've done some research, our team, again, has done an amazing job digging in, discovering that the explicit content filter is not filtering out visual content. So if you're familiar with Spotify, how they've introduced podcasts over the last several years, this includes video podcasts, a lot more imagery on the Spotify app. And yes, it includes lyrics on screen, descriptive content, that they would call audio pornography in some cases, but also video and imagery. There's no straightforward way to report these crimes and harms on the app. And it's something, one of those things that slips through the filters for kids as well, which is concerning to me as someone who uses that app.
Can you describe the level that these companies have to control this kind of material if they wanted to? In other words, it's not the lack of filters. It's not the lack of technology that's enabling them to let this go. It's a conscious effort. Is that what you're finding?
That is what we're finding. It's about allocating resources. You know, for the most part, it's profit over people has always been the way that they operate. For example, a couple of years ago, the technology company MindGeek, who owns some of the world's biggest adult websites and pornography websites, including Pornhub, once they were finally under the gun and truly being investigated, and they had to attend a government hearing there in Canada, where their headquarters is based, all of a sudden, mysteriously, about 9 to 10 million pieces of content disappeared from their website. It was just gone. So we know that these tech companies are very aware of the content that's on their site. And as soon as there's public pressure or someone poking around to see what might be illegal here, they can take action. It's a matter of them allocating time, energy, and resources to do so. And yeah, sometimes it'll cost them money. We believe it's worth it to protect human beings.
Yeah, so public pressure is crucial. Is that what you're saying?
It is. It's absolutely crucial. They hear from parents, from their potential customers, and from kids as well, who are their future customers. That is the insurance they have that their company is going to be strong for years to come. If they hear from them, this is what we want. We want more protection. They're much more likely to act than if they hear from just a group like us, where we come in. If we have the backing of people, it makes all the difference.
Yeah. Tim, if you would talk about legislation, because there is a role of the federal government in policing and regulating some of these companies. What are you finding in terms of the willingness to pass legislation or the ability of legislation to keep up with the technology?
Yeah, there are a number of pieces of legislation that we have endorsed over the years that we think would make a difference. For example, COSA, the Kids Online Safety Act, was introduced in the U.S. House this year. And right now it is in that, as if you're familiar with the process, it is in the process of, we're hoping it gets some markup soon and goes through the committee. We'd love to see that. We believe it's going to help curb the rampant harms happening to children on platforms like Roblox, Instagram, Discord, Spotify, and these others that are named on the list. And we understand there are concerns around privacy and around free speech concerns with COSA. And our team has done extensive research on this. And we believe your First Amendment rights are not going to be impeded by COSA. It's going to protect kids. But that is usually the biggest holdup on legislative pieces like this, is you'll have people from both sides that don't like the potential fallout that they or their constituents believe could happen. And so, I understand that. I empathize with that. But in this case, we believe that protecting people should come over profit.
Yeah. Tim, what would you recommend a parent do in terms of talking with their child about some of the potential dangers on these apps? Are there certain talking points that you would recommend that we use?
You know, I'm glad you asked that. And if I could just for a second, I mean, I'm a dad. Yeah. I've got teenagers. You know, I'm about to have my fifth teenager hit middle school this year. So I'm going to have many teenagers in the house this year. And we have these conversations, and I can just say from experience, they're not easy, because our kids, they all have friends with the smartphones, with the social media apps. And it's so important, if you're going to let your kids have a smartphone or have social media, it's so important to have open and honest conversations. Here are the concerns. Pull up our website, pull up dirtydozenlist.com, show them some of the concerns that are happening, show them some of the stories that we share. and some of the resources that we have, and just be really transparent with your kids. You know, I've also been reminded recently, a very valid approach for a lot of parents is keep your kids away from smartphones and social media when they're in these very important formative years. And I think that's a very valid approach. But in some cases, that may not be a viable option for certain families, for depending on whatever the situation is. And so if your kid is going to have access to a smartphone, I just encourage very open and honest conversations about it and allow them to help draw those conclusions as well. In my experience, teens will also draw those conclusions like, man, this is pretty horrible. This is happening. We should do something. Kids should know about this. They don't know that there are predators pretending to be kids their age on these platforms. And I think that open conversation is a good place to start. And our website does have a lot of resources that can help with that at dirtydozenlist.com.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that website. I was just going to segue to that. So if you're listening and you want more information about these top companies that are involved in sexual exploitation, a lot of things that you can do as a parent or as an individual to take an action, the website is dirtydozenlist.com, dirtydozenlist.com. Tim Nestor, our guest with the National Center on Sexual Exploitation. Tim, thanks for being with us and explaining this good work that's going on.
I appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
On June 19th, the governor of Louisiana, Jeff Landry, put his signature on a new law that requires public schools and state-funded universities to display the Ten Commandments. Well, needless to say, a firestorm of protest was set off by this, including a lawsuit from the ACLU to challenge the law. My next guest, Dr. Jerry Newcomb, is executive director of Providence Forum, a division of Coral Ridge Ministries, and he's written an article titled, Are the Ten Commandments Making a Comeback? He's with us now. Hello, Dr. Newcomb. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Jeff. Good to be with you.
You're a theologian and a student of American history. I'll ask you the question. Is there a new openness to having the Ten Commandments displayed like this?
I think so. I think people have realized that the way this encroaching secularism being imposed upon us, often through judicial fiat, in other words, through court decisions for years and years and years, has chipped away so much at the foundation of American liberty. I'm confident that the founding fathers would have been aghast at the idea that the Ten Commandments would not even be allowed in public schools. And yet there was a Supreme Court decision in 1980 where they actually said, it was Stone v. Graham, if the Ten Commandments are posted in the schools, then maybe the children will read them, meditate on them, venerate them, and obey them. And then they said, well, that's impermissible according to the establishment clause of the First Amendment. But you know, George Washington himself referred to the rules that heaven itself has ordained. We should never neglect those. John Adams said our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. And yet, the modern secularists have pushed, you know, any kind of religious expression out of the public square as if that somehow is what the founders wanted under the Establishment Clause. Mm-hmm. And that's just baloney.
How foundational are the Ten Commandments to the national laws that we have?
Well, I think at least indirectly, you could say that they're the basis so much of our laws. And, it's very interesting. I just heard a theologian talk about theologians talk about the Ten Commandments and how protective they are. They're protective to society. The first commandment, I am the Lord your God, you shall know the gods before me. That protects theology. The second commandment protects, well, how do we worship that one true God? The third one protects his holy name. The fourth one protects his day, which, by the way, is for us and for our good. You know, it's good to have those. You've heard this illustration, I'm sure, Jeff. If you take a rubber band and you stretch it out beyond tautness and then you put it between two poles and just keep it like that, eventually it will lose its stretchiness because it wears out. We need to take breaks, and the Sabbath allows that. The fifth commandment protects the family. The sixth, rather, protects life. The seventh, marriage. The eighth, property and making a living. The ninth protects your reputation from false witness. And finally, the tenth one protects your heart. So the Ten Commandments are very good, and historically, the Bible, and including the Ten Commandments, have been a part of our laws, as in the background at least.
Dr. Newcomb, states like Texas, Oklahoma, Utah have proposed bills like the one that we've seen in Louisiana, but they haven't been able to make them into law. Do you think that we've reached a place or a tipping point in our nation where lawmakers aren't going to be worried about groups like the ACLU and just go ahead and pass these into laws?
That's very possible. You know, when the Ten Commandments were banned from the public schools in 1980, when prayer was banned in 1962, at least prayers officially written by the school officials or whatever, in 1962, and then Bible reading as devotions was banned in 1963 and so forth by the Supreme Court. The net effect of all that was to drive any kind of Christian expression out of the public arena and in the public schools. And it's gotten to a ridiculous point. And when those things happened, there were no school shootings like there are today. You know, they didn't have any of that kind of terrible type of things. It's almost as if, okay, God has been kicked out of the public schools, and in his place, we've had to put in the you know, metal detectors. So I think maybe some of this is bouncing back, if you will.
I think about that because of all of the high-profile people leaving California. And these are not known religious figures, but they're pointing to the social chaos that's there. And it just makes me wonder if our society as a whole isn't reaching a point where we're saying, you know, maybe we shouldn't have outlawed God in the public schools.
Yeah, well, okay, you mentioned the schools specifically. Yep. Okay, I'm going to say this. The founding fathers in 1787, and then they reaffirmed the same law in 1789. It's called the Northwest Ordinance. The idea behind it was that when new territories were to become new states of the United States of America, they would all kind of have the same type of template. And in that Article 3 of the Northwest Ordinance, they said, religion, morality, and knowledge being necessary for good government and the happiness of mankind, schools and the means of education shall forever be encouraged. Now, this was at a time when education still, it was voluntary, it was church-run, there was a lot of homeschooling, and the kids were literate, because back then, the Bible was the chief textbook in one way or another. Now, think about this. The founding fathers of America said that the reason for schools and education, which should be encouraged forever, was religion, which in those days, the vast majority of that meant Christianity in one stripe or another, morality, including, you know, Judeo-Christian morality, certainly including the Ten Commandments, and knowledge. You know, oh, yeah, we got to throw in knowledge too. Yeah, there's going to, you know, but now it's been totally twisted. And now it's been so twisted where, you know, my work at Coral Ridge Ministries through the years, I remember doing a story one time about a student in Tennessee. I believe it was Tennessee. She received permission and then was denied permission, where she was assigned, write a paper and show how you use historical sources and, you know, you footnote things. So she wanted to write about the historical Jesus. And initially the teacher said, okay, that's fine, as long as you, you know, get your bibliography and your footnotes and all that right. And then the teacher changed her mind and said, no, you can't write about Jesus. That's a violation of separation of church and state. Meanwhile, other students were writing about magic and other religions and so forth. And the teacher or the student said, wait, you gave me permission. Anyway, bottom line, she got an F. And Nat Hentoff, not even a Christian man, but a man who was aware of, you know, civil liberties and the fine points of civil liberties. In fact, he was kicked off the board from the ACLU for being too conservative in his perspectives. He was an atheist. But anyway, he wrote a column about that. And I never forget the headline. It said, an F for Jesus in the public school. And I thought, wow, what a story. And we interviewed her and her father and so forth. Bottom line is, you know, the founders never intended for religion to be, you know, not allowed at all in the public schools. And even if you read, for example, the decision about the Bible and the public school in 1963, they were basically saying that, the Bible shouldn't be used as a devotional where you're trying to, in effect, cause the kids to worship. You know, I disagree with that. But bottom line is, they even said you should know about the Bible. And therefore, if, you know, a teacher wanted to teach about the Bible related to history, that's fine. But the way the ACLU and their ilk, they've created a secular wasteland in so many parts of our public square. And then no wonder people are just resorting to their own natural evil within. We're all evil within. The key thing about the founders is they recognize that fact. That's why they divided power. That's why they said our rights come from God, and they are non-negotiable.
Hey, that's very good. Dr. Jerry Newcomb is our guest today. I want to point you to a website at providenceforum.org, where there are a number of resources. And Dr. Newcomb, I'll ask you about one. The Foundation of American Liberty is on the website. Tell us about that resource and other things that people can find when they go there.
Sure. The Foundation of American Liberty is a series of films that I've made that is in seven different parts. Rabbi Lapin, by the way, is one of the guests. So is Dennis Prager. So is Oz Guinness, Eric Metaxas, Bill Federer, Dr. Peter Loback, who founded Providence Forum and generously gave it to the ministry, and many others. And the reason that we put this film series together is to basically show that in all these different ways, Christianity played a key role in the founding of America. I like to put it this way. What's right about America, and how did it get that way? The answer is found in those seven different parts, from beginning from the pilgrims, city on a hill, the beginning of wisdom of the Bible and education, the road to independence, how Christianity played a key role, greasing the skids towards independence, then George Washington, then endowed by the Creator about the Declaration of Independence, and finally, we the people. And the question about, well, what about slavery and evil things like that are not compatible with Christianity? Where does that fit into the picture? Well, we deal with all these things and show how the whole world has been blessed because of principles of the Bible being applied to civil government and all these other spheres of life in what became America. So the good things about America can be seen and can often be traced right back to the pages of the Holy Scriptures.
That's wonderful. Well, again, the website is providenceforum.org, a film series called The Foundation of American Liberty. Dr. Newcomb, it's been a pleasure to have you on the program once again, and certainly we want to be in prayer for governors like Jeff Landry and other lawmakers that they would step out and have courage to do what is right and to hopefully turn our country back to the Lord. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Jeff. God bless.
Next week, we'll mark the 55th anniversary of the first moon landing. We'll talk about scientific discovery and the Christian worldview with Dr. Jonathan Sarfati of Creation Ministries International. Remember, you can get a podcast of today's program with guest information at afr.net. And get your free 6-month trial subscription to The Stand magazine or sign up for the daily email at afa.net/The Stand. Thank you for listening, and join us again next time here on The Stand Radio.